Hey, everybody, and welcome to an utter episode of Indie Film Cafe. I am your co-host, the Moo Cow, a.k.a. Paulie Presenza, and today I am joined by...
Jonathan A. Moody, your other co-host.
Absolutely. And together, the two of us are joined by...
Justin.
Woohoo!
Again.
Our former co-host.
I keep coming back.
Back for more punishment.
Yeah. But it's been a couple months, so, you know.
It has. And, as I recall, the reason this episode is happening is because last time, Just Jen said, we have to do some kind of 80s movie.
Cheesy 80s movies.
She was dying for it.
Guy with shirts off, and preferably.
She wanted that, too.
Maybe that'll have to be the next movie, because I don't think anybody has their shirts off in that.
We don't want to see
it. No.
Their shirts off.
Well, maybe Mr. McGreevy. But in any case, in lieu of that fact, we decided, because Riff Tracks Live happened to be doing a movie called Hobgoblins, we figured this was a perfect time to introduce Mr. Moody to the movie.
I've never seen it. Oh,
my goodness. Rick Sloan, baby. Hobgoblins all the way. So this should be informative and fun. And man, are we going to get into the 80s big time with this one. So hold on to your seats, and we will be right back after hearing some mood music. Here to talk about what?
Hobgoblins.
Hobgoblins! Okay, well...
Is there a Misty song?
We are back. So, Mr. Moody, this was your first viewing of Hobgoblins. Did it meet your expectations?
We were talking about it earlier. I really do have to watch the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version because... I think that'd be more fun. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't at all a terrible, like god awful, like worst movie of all time kind of thing. But it was the problem I had with it was there were little points where it's kind of boring, and it kind of dragged on. And as like Jen was telling us earlier, like there's times where there's just no music, so it's just a little awkward, you know, and that made it sort of boring too. You know, like, we want somebody to be talking over this shit because, like, it's just, you know, whatever. But
you know,
it was kind of what I sort of expected from it, I guess.
Yeah, you don't want to be in a position where you're hearing the puppets move around off camera.
It's all they did. All they was growl like.
So, Just Jen, was this your first experience seeing the film without a Mystery Science Theater or Riff Tracks background?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
So it's.
I tend not to watch any Riff Tracks or MST3K movies without their commentary. It's
typically wise.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's difficult. See, you don't like this typically anyway. You like to make fun of it, right?
Like, oh, I mean,
these are your things to go. You know, you're not like Paul trying to
well, I mean,
these things
no
out.
One's like Paul.
So, I'm a little like Paul when it comes to these things. I love to watch these and find these terrible movies.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But see, that's why we created this team to begin with and dragged you into it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Kicking and screaming. Wow, she volunteered.
No,
come on.
No.
She was like, I heard you're doing this show on bad films. Please, I'll give you some money. Let me be part of it.
I don't think she's bashed. We got money? I never got any of that.
Meet my accountant. But it is a very, very different experience. Now, when I first saw this movie, it was way back in the late 80s when it was out on VHS, and it was in a lot of mom-pop video stores. So
when was it released?
1988. Ah. So I saw it back then, and at the time, because there was a boatload of cheesy 80s films, it was just kind of in the mix with all the others. And I'm like, oh, yeah, silly, cheesy Gremlins ripoff. That's really about it. I never really gave it much of a second thought. It wasn't until later when I finally saw it on Mystery Science Theater 3000 and they did their show, which is one of their best shows they ever did. Some of the riffs on that episode is high freaking hysterical. That's what, to me, elevated it to a whole new way of looking at this film. because the riffs on that are just priceless. And it introduced the movie to a lot of people who had never even seen it before, never heard of it before.
Because, I wonder why.
Yeah, well, and again, it's one of those films you have to dig if you can find a copy of it.
Mm-hmm. Wait, so is it like not available very easily on DVD or Blu-ray?
It wasn't, but now, thanks to Mystery Science Theater 3000, it has been. In fact, there's now a Blu-ray release that's out there. And, as you did point out, at the 20-year anniversary of the film, Rick Sloan did manage to make a second film, Hobgoblins 2. And not only that, he managed to get the original cast back together, and they did a bunch of extras, and they did interviews and stuff like that. That's also on the disc, which is way 20 year, cool.
20-year reunion.
Mm. Right. That's nice. So I'm thinking maybe for what Patreon only, maybe the three of us could do Hobgoblins 2, so you guys could get a taste of that and see what that's like. Because the story picks up 20 years later, same characters. Aren't you fascinated and dying to know what happens to these guys 20 years later?
I'm just wondering if the nerdy guy ever got any.
Kyle!
Yeah, true.
All right.
He's probably driving around in a white van.
He's probably had to switch it up.
So let me do a little background on the movie. So Hobgoblins, like I said, was released in 1988. Rick Sloan, writer, director, he also was the cinematographer and editor. He is also known for doing these Vice Academy movies, which are the Police Academy movie ripoffs. Yeah. He did 6 of those.
But those were like more like Skinamax.
Right, movies. Right. Yeah. He also did movies called Babe Watch, Blood, Good Girls Don't, Blood Theater, sorry.
Did he do those before Hobgoblin?
Most of them were after.
Okay, well, I'm saying because, like, this movie had no skin.
The one before that was The Visitants. I have never seen that, and I'm dying to get my hands on it. I believe that's his first film.
Who's on that?
I don't know. It's one of the other ones that's lost in time. But he started off, I think I mentioned that he is originally from L.A. He went to Hollywood High School. He started off making fake movie trailers because he thought it was kind of fun. And then he sort of learned his craft that way, and he ended up going to film school. Now, here's a fun little factoid I found on the internet, or Internet Movie Database. Apparently, he was told in film school that he was the least talented student in his class.
Oh.
I know. How awful is that?
I mean, it's one thing to know it, and everybody knows it. You just don't tell the person.
I know. There's some things you just, like, don't say to someone.
I know. Yeah, poor guy.
B for effort.
But, you know, he's gone on and made a boatload of movies. So Rick Sloan did not listen to that, whoever that was. So good for him.
Or
not. Oh, come on. This is entertaining.
I don't know. I'm glad it got made. You know.
All right. So the principal cast is mainly made up by people who never really did much anything else. Kevin was played by Tom Barnett. Frigid Amy is played by Paige Sullivan. Daphne is played by Kelly Palmer. Nick is played by Billy Frank, who actually...
Kelly Palmer, I think she also did the casting for the movie, too.
Yeah, I think so.
She put herself in the role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Billy Frank played Nick. He was also in a movie called Lady Avenger and Vampire Knights with a K.
Oh, I've heard of that.
And then finally, Kyle, everybody's favorite, was played by Stephen Briggs.
Do you kiss on the first date?
I go all the way on the first date.
My kind of woman.
But the fascinating thing is that the supporting cast, on the other hand, had a lot of experience later on. So I'll start talking about those guys. So first of all, there's your favorite, Fantasia, played by Tamara Clatterback, a.k.a. at the time Tammy Back, or Backy, B-A-K-K-E. She's in a lot of stuff. She was in Battling Amazons. She was in the first Vice Academy movie. She was in UHF. She was in Good Girls Don't Cry. She was in Mind Rage. She was in The Last Damage.
Good Girls Don't Cry or Good Girls Don't Cry?
Good Girls Don't Cry.
I've never heard of that.
On TV, she was in The X-Files. She was on ER. She was on Nip Tuck, The Mentalist, Criminal Minds, NYPD Blue, and Profiler. So she's gone on and actually had something of a career.
So I had to stop there for a minute when you said UHF, which is one of my favorite cheesy bad movies. That's what I was trying to think.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's our buddy McCready, who was played by Jeffrey Culver. We just covered a movie with him.
Yeah, we just did Nightmare Sisters.
Nightmare Sisters was a lot of fun. He was also in Rick Stone's first movie, The Visitants, and also Lady Avenger. He was in a movie called Payback. He was in Bad Girls from Mars. That's the other movie I remember him from.
Okay.
Virgin High. Good Lord. Time
Barbarians. What that's about.
Time Barbarians, which I have never seen. And I'm dying to get my hooves on. And he was in several of the Vice Academy movies, 3 and 6. So Rick Sloan tends to use people over and over and over, which is useful.
I did the same thing too, so.
Sure. Then there's our buddy Road Rash, played by Dwayne Whitaker, whom you recognized, right?
Well, he's had a career in the sort of more the indie route, but he's done a lot of
30 years. Stuff. Yeah. So for TV, he's done stuff like L.A. Law, Hard Copy, Highway to Heaven, Murder, She Wrote, Roseanne, Quantum Leap, and Justified. And movies, he's been in a bunch of things. Deadly Dreams, let's see, Vice Academy 2, Pulp Fiction, remember you pointed that out. Yeah. He was in Puppet Master 5, Night of the Scarecrow. Yeah.
I think he's friends with Jeff.
Yeah, I think so too. Low Budget Time Machine, which I've never seen. But he was also in Devil's Rejects, Trailer Park of Terror, Halloween 2, the Rob Zombie version.
Oh, okay.
And Children of the Corn Genesis. What? Children of the Corn Genesis.
Children of the Corn Genesis.
So he's has a career.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in the business a good long time.
Yeah.
And then finally, the adorable Pixie, played by Carrie French. She is in a bunch of things. She's in a movie that I'm dying to show you guys. It's terrible, called The Wizard of Speed and Time. That's where I know her from. But she was also in Danger Zone 3, Angels of the City, Vice Academy 3, Wildling.
But does she have the beehive?
No. Shadow Hours, Repo Chick, and Tweaked. So he definitely had some folks in there who had some experience, at least if not initially, certainly went on to have experience. And I think the other thing I wanted to mention was the wonderful, wonderful film music. The band was the Fontanelles. And for a long time, nobody could figure out what the damn song title was from what they were saying.
Screaming. Well, no, not screaming.
You know, so Mystery Science Theater famously said it was fish picker or pig licker. I thought it was ass kicker, because I couldn't really tell. It turns out it's kiss kicker, kiss kicker 99, which makes no sense.
No, that makes sense. Whatever.
So I found a few interesting little tidbits on Internet Movie Database that I thought you might be interested. First of all, I did mention that the puppets were operated by a woman who had just been released from a mental hospital, which is fun.
I thought you were kidding.
No. And you know who made the puppets,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, I've interviewed Kenneth J. Hall, who, back then, I only knew him because he had directed a movie called The Halfway House, which I rented from Netflix or so, and I interviewed him about that because that was the newest thing. And I mean, I knew he was I think he worked with Charles Band and he's done a lot of their stuff.
That makes sense with puppets.
I think he might have worked, I don't know if he did the Puppet Master movies, but I think I'm pretty sure he worked on Ghoulies and things like that, which Hobgoblins is very much a Ghoulies inspired.
Munchies, all that.
Gremlins, kind of thing, which. we'll talk about it later. The look on those puppets' face.
Yes.
It makes me laugh.
Priceless.
I want one.
Yes, we all want one.
Yeah. I want a real one, obviously. I don't want it to be alive, but I want the puppet.
Well, you'll be fascinated to know that even in the late 80s, this had a $15,000 budget. That's cheap.
Well, how much?
$15,000. Yeah.
That's 30, impressive. Probably, it would have been 30 or 40,000 back then, in terms
of comparable money. Yeah, but even so, that's cheap. That's really cheap.
I mean, $15,000 today is definitely cheap, but this movie could be made on that. It just wouldn't have the live grenade pyrotechnics. So
very realistic grenades.
Would have CGI shit,
And just Jen, I know you loved the Club Scum announcer. He's one of your favorite.
Actually, I didn't like him.
There you go.
He cracked me up.
His name is Darren Norris, and he is typically a voice actor. So, for example, he did voice acting in a movie called In the Bedroom, which is actually a good movie. He was also in TV. He was on Veronica Mars, Son of the Beach, Grounded for Life. And he was apparently a longtime person in a show called Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide.
So the next thing about Darren Norris is that he was also in a number of films, including Vice Academy 1. As you can see, a lot of these people show up in the Vice Academy movies. He was also in a Veronica Mars movie in 2014. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. And he was in a movie that I had heard about but never seen called Billy Frankenstein that I had heard interesting things about. So I wouldn't mind checking that out at some point.
Billy Frankenstein.
Kind of like, you think like a Frankenstein mashup with Billy Madison, maybe? I don't know. I want you to, you know, the Frankenstein monster wants to dance and sing and all that. So, Mr. Moody, this is your first time seeing this film. What, can you kind of summarize exactly what happens?
Okay, so it starts off at a, they say it's a studio. I don't know, kind of studio or whatever, but it's a studio, and there's two security guards, and one of the security guards says, yay, don't go in this one area, go everywhere else, don't go there. You know, and the first thing the dude does is go straight there.
This is the old guy with the giant fuzzy caterpillar eyebrows.
Yes, which we know from Nightmare Sisters. And then there's this younger guy who I guess he's been doing it for like a couple weeks or something. But for some reason, he's never been told, which is so strange because the other one's been told like the first day of everything. So it's like, whatever. Anyway.
Don't do the thing. He goes and does the thing.
So he ends up, I guess it brings your wildest fantasies to life. He wants to be a rock star on a stage or something, and then he randomly falls off the stage. Like, I guess he's supposed to be grabbed, but we don't see any, like, arms or anything. And then he is killed, and then the security guard is like, oh no, what has happened? You know,
right? I'll just leave his ass there.
Right, so he shuts the door, and then he has to tell the boss, oh man, we need another security guard. Mine quit on us, blah, 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 without, you know, whatever.
So who does he hire?
Well, I'll get to that in a second. So later we meet this guy who's kind of like this dorky guy who has this, actually, I guess that is right. He hires him.
Kevin.
And we meet his people. I thought we met the people first, but now we meet, so he gets a job working as a, what is it?
Security guard,
and then he basically goes off to become a, what is it? Like he goes, finds out from the first day, don't go in that room. So he's like, all right, I won't go in that room. You know,
so you think that they would, you know, lock the room, wouldn't you? Padlock it so that if nobody can go in there, nobody actually could go in there. No, of course not.
Don't even shut the door. That's much.
Well, no, I mean, they shut the door and then it opens again anyway. So.
Well, then the door's not shut.
Yeah. It's shut behind her or whatever. But anyway, it doesn't. And like, they'll shut it, then it'll open. Like, you'd think, like, you know, then maybe get something to fix that, you know, or whatever. But anyway.
It's worked for 30 years. It's perfectly fine.
Yes. He's been there 30 years being a security guard.
But he only lost like 4 people is what they said. I'm like, really? And out of 30 years, only 4 people have been dumb enough to go in that room? And 2 of them are like from the very beginning of the movie.
Right.
You know, like where we're at. But anyway. So we meet his friends his girlfriend, who's very frigidy, as you said.
That's Amy.
Amy. And then we meet Amy's. They're all his friends. I guess is what he said.
In theory, they're friends, but they're all shitty to each other.
Yeah.
What's the guy's name?
Rick and Daphne.
Nick and Daphne.
Nick and Daphne.
No, we don't meet Nick yet.
We meet Daphne,
and we meet Kyle.
Yeah, we're Kyle.
Tell me about, Jen, tell me about Kyle.
Kyle's that friend that is sexually repressed. He never gets any, and he's sleazy. He just gives you the creeps. He's the one you don't want to sit next to.
But all the girls do sit next to him.
And he's the guy who will rock the yellow shirt and the pink shorts. That was my nickname for him, Pink Shorts.
For a long time. Yeah.
Pink shorts.
And what does he do?
He likes to call up sex foam sex lines and just listen to them.
Which was a thing, if you kids may not believe this, but in the 80s.
I know that. I know of it. I never did.
It was 1-800 numbers. Yep. 1-800, then it was 1-900
numbers.
And God, they start off at like $5.99 a minute or more. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if they ever got cheaper, but good Lord.
Now, you usually got, well, I don't know, from reading. You know, you usually got like the first minute or so free, and then it went to like the $5.99, $6.
And who has he been calling this whole time?
Fantasia.
Yeah.
It was not 900 Skag, which is my favorite thing.
900 Skag.
Yep.
So they end up meeting these people. Then we meet Nick, who's this guy who just got back from the military. He's, you know, he's the typical jocks and slash military buff dude.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is, he doesn't come off that way at all. Like, he comes off very, like, he's almost like one of the dorky guys like everybody else to me. Like, I did not see him as that.
He's like a buff nerd.
Yeah.
If you could have like such a thing.
He's like, you know, the buffest of the nerds.
And he can handle a hoe.
He had the rake.
He had the rake? Or, okay, I thought. One had a hoe, one had a rake.
Yeah, Kevin had the hoe. Yeah. But that's a little later.
Yeah, this gardening foo thing that goes on. Yeah.
So anyway, they end up talking or whatever. And then basically, the two of them decide, it's been, you know, I haven't seen you in a while. Let's go to the van. And I was like, is the van going to rock? And of course, the van rocks. But it's like, it's the weirdest sound. It's like the sound of like cartoon boings. Like
right.
Boing, 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 boing.
It's very cartoony.
And I was like, what is going on in this movie already?
Well, it's funny because this scene, it's there to sort of design to set up how these people are and what their relationships are. And clearly, Nick and Daphne are, you know, sex perverty kinds of people. Amy is Miss Frigid. Kyle is just a wackadoodle.
And she keeps getting mad at Kevin for not being manly, but she doesn't seem to like his friends. And
the dude owns a house in LA, for God's sakes.
There's that one scene that made me feel awkward, and I told you guys about it while I was watching it, where she was just like sitting next to Nick.
Right.
And she was like so comfortably close to him that I was like, because later on there's a line about a three-way, basically, and I was like,
a couple lines.
What?
There was a couple lines.
Yeah.
You
know. Even Daphne turned her nose up to that one, so.
Yeah. So anyway, they end up the gang there end up ganging up on Kevin and saying that he's not a tough guy and he's learned some, you know. He needs to fight, basically, Nick.
Be a man!
To prove his manliness. So he fights Nick, and the fight choreography was terrible. It was just like, bang, bang.
Prolong bang. Rake and hoe stick fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, the music. Oh, my God. So it was the same music every single time they hit and everything. I was just like, oh, my God, what's this going to end? So they end up, I guess he ends up losing the fight, and the girl has no respect for him. So he ends up going to work, and there's a robber at the work. I don't think I'm skipping.
David Boreanaz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David Boreanaz from Angel. So this robber comes in, and he's just trying to, what was his plan? Steal stuff or something? I don't know.
From the empty studio that nobody goes into?
It didn't look like anything there to steal.
www.plotdevice.com.
So like, oh my God, there's a guy there, so let's, you know, you gotta go stop him. So Kevin goes to stop the guy. The old man goes to stop him first. And then old man gets attacked, and Kevin comes in with the gun to attack him, or to threaten him. And the guy sees that the gun is loaded, so he runs off. And the first thing he says is, I wish Amy could have seen this.
I was a man.
Like, Amy doesn't give a fuck about anything. So he ends up...
Snowstorm Amy.
Yeah, so they end up the guy ends up running away and running into the place again, getting into where they
unlock the open vault.
The vault! Yeah. The vault!
The vault. So he has to go in there and stop him. And this is the worst scene probably in the movie, where he's talking to him on the he's talking to him on the walkie-talkie, and there's like silence. Then he kind of like, I was just going, what the fuck? Why is he like, oh my god, he's going into the vault. I should, you know. And then he stops and he puts the thing down, and then you see what's his name, and this is editing problem. This should have been edited quicker, but you see the guy go, oh my god, don't go in the vault. The thing's already there. Also, maybe it's editing issue because he had to, you know, it had to specify that it was already gone. But it made it look bad. It made him look like, why is he now saying this?
Right. You know? And poor Jeffrey Culver is like 70 at this point, and he runs through the whole movie. This poor old guy. It was a shame. I felt bad for him. But he has to run after him and try and save him. But he's too late. Remember, the guy's like, we're too late. And the hobgoblins have escaped. And of course, he doesn't even know what the hell's going on.
We don't see him. We still haven't seen. You hear.
Rowling, growling.
Yeah, like growling.
You hear growling, but you don't see
when
him.
They run, everybody looks down and you hear the pitter patter of little feet.
Nope.
So he has to explain to Kevin what's going on, and his explanation's like, what?
No. Well, right before then, we actually do see the creatures. Right before them, because they're in the little golf cart with this big smile on their face.
Puppets, the ridiculous puppets.
Puppets are stuffed animals. Those are stuffed animals.
Somebody's behind them, moving them.
Well, yeah, but it's not actually.
I don't think I've ever seen their mouth actually move.
Nah.
Well, remember we were talking, is it a puppet or is it a doll? And I was like, well, maybe it's a paw or a duppet.
It's a you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a you, it's a paw. Or is that what you are?
Yes.
Are you a puppet?
Yes. I wish.
And a doll mixed together.
That's right.
Alright.
Me and the monkey.
Okay. All right, so,
but they're stuffies. They're basically evil stuffies.
Yeah, stuffies. You know, I said I wanted one. I'm gonna get that back.
And loads of shenanigans happens, and then the what I love is the actors clearly have to pretend that the stuffies are attacking them, so they're just holding them up close.
I even made that joke about Bela Lugosi in the movie Ed Wood, where, you know, Ed was just like, you know, thrash around. It looked like he's killing you, you know, or whatever. But like. That was what it was.
And I love the reaction Bela Lugosi gives him. He's like, oh, for Christ's sake.
How do you turn this thing on?
Right.
So, I mean, it's kind of like that, where, you know, these things are not animatronic or anything. They didn't have the money for that, obviously. No. So they had to make do with what you can. And I've seen independent films that do that with puppets and stuff. You know, they have. We saw that in Creatures. What was it?
The little bitey puppets. Yeah.
Little bitey puppets. They were obviously.
But they were more like dolls, biting. I think. Yeah.
Yeah, they were dolls, and they weren't really biting, but they had to look like they were biting.
Or somebody was off throwing them at people or something. You know.
It was funny. Yeah, that's something that you probably.
But enjoy. At least in this movie, as opposed to the Bitey Puppet movie, there were at least 4 or 5 different puppets that were all slightly different.
Yeah.
You know, there was some that were kind of fatter than others.
There had been at least 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were more that existed.
Yeah, they kept dying and more would pop in, so they had to use the same 5 over and over.
Yeah. Right. But, like, yeah, but they were definitely the same ones or whatever, which is sort of funny because, like, all their expressions are almost the same, you know? So they're always smiling, you know, or whatever.
They're happy.
They're happy little hobgoblins causing mischief.
They like light. It's lots of light.
And so that's what they do. They quote-unquote get into people's heads, learn about their wildest dreams, and then make them come true. And it's funny because McGreevy's like, I can't tell if they're doing it to do some good for people. I'm like, well, no, because they're all dying. So yeah. I don't think so.
They die at the end, but they at least get to live out their wildest fantasies. But, you know, they don't really, because, like, you know, the guy in the beginning, he's singing to nobody. You know, he's He's just on a stage. Right. That's why I was so confused. I was like, wait, there's a stage back there? But it's while the stream. He's on a stage singing. And I'm guessing there's supposed to be people in the crowd. But
we hear it.
So there's people like he's singing to, and he's actually getting his wildest dream to come true.
And
then he dies.
It's so funny because he's up there posing. He's not even really, he's just like,
But then Kyle doesn't even get to have his wildest dream. His wildest fantasy is to actually have sex. He doesn't even get that. So.
And you notice because he doesn't get it. And then what about old man McGreevy? He's been there 30 years. They never did it to him either.
Feeling though he's more of a caretaker of these creatures, like they wouldn't attack him or wouldn't go after him, because when they first during the flashback, you know, these aliens land and he thinks I get the impression he thinks they're kind of cute looking.
He lets them live on the lot as his secret? Yeah, what?
Yes.
What weird world is this?
Right. Yeah, but like, he's not feeding them people.
Well, I don't know.
So, like, how do they live off of this thing? Do aliens just live forever?
Maybe they eat cotton swabs or something. They're stuffed animals. I don't know.
No.
But he does explain they like bright light. Which was a very prevalent.
Yes, it's don't feed them after midnight.
They're only attracted to bright light. Oh, yeah. I have to say that several times. They're only attracted to bright light. Okay.
They could have just said bright colors because they had that horrible 80s fashion thing going on.
Yeah.
You mean delightful?
Yeah. So we had talked about dressing up for that, but we just couldn't throw it together.
Oh, yeah.
Yet. Yet.
One day we'll do
it. When we do the Patreon only. We'll get dressed up for it, and we'll post that picture.
Okay, so he explains what's going on. It's aliens that come down there. Now he's kept them in this vault, and nobody's allowed to go in there because if they go in there, they're gonna die. You know, or they're gonna escape. And I think that was his biggest fear, is that they would escape. So for 30 years, they have not escaped, and now all of a sudden they've escaped. And I'm just like. Wait, so all of a sudden, like, one guy, like, out of, you know what I mean? For 30 years, one dude, like, fucked this whole thing up and everything? Like, I don't know.
Thanks, McGreevy.
Yeah, so anyway, he ends up, they end up escaping. They end up going to the one house in the whole place. I was like, wait, what? Like, I thought they would go, it would be funnier if they had gone to, like, Club Scum first and messed with them or whatever. They got it. Like, you know what I mean? Just got her all around. Well,
they were having a swinging 80s party with Kyle's pink shorts dancing all over the place.
So bright light.
White. So 80s. So bad. Bad dancing.
Oh, it was hysterical.
Oh.
So anyway, they end up kind of... what's his name? The main guy?
Kevin.
Kevin ends up, like, I guess, I don't know if he's trying to warn his friends or something, just let them know what's going on, but they happen to already be there. And what's her name? Came outside.
Daphne.
She thought there was something out there. So she came outside. She thought it was Nick.
So it was her boyfriend, right?
That was her boyfriend.
Because she heard the van, but the puppet had the little horn.
Right.
Come on. It just happens to sound exactly like his van.
Yeah, of course.
It's a comedy.
And it's not meant to be taken seriously, I don't think.
No.
I think any of his movies are meant to be taken seriously.
I hope not.
I hope not, too. So he ends up going up and she ends up going outside to check, and the girl, the friend, comes out and talks to her for a second, Amy, and then she goes back inside. And then the puppet shows up, and that was terrible. Like, they're going, the puppet is snarling at her, and she's like, "Oh, Amy, go away." And I'm like, "Who the fuck snarls at somebody like that?" Like, and like as a human, you know.
Well,
I don't know.
Snarling girls can puppets. Be that way.
But here's the thing, though. It was that its attack on her was to make her think that Nick was outside and that was it? Because that's not really much of a fantasy.
I don't think this girl really had much of a fantasy.
You would think if anyone was going to be some kind of wackadoodle sex thing.
Yeah.
And then she just clubs it to death with a hoe.
Yeah, she hoes it to death.
Well, that's true, though. When you think about the movie, she didn't have
She was like any of them.
It's inconsistent. Yeah. You might even say it was a continuity error.
No, I don't think so. Because and it has to do with the story. I just don't think I don't think it got to her yet. You know, it got to all the other people before it got to her, because it got to the boyfriend, it got to Amy, it got to
Kyle.
Kyle. It got to Kevin at the end, I think.
Well, we will have to get Rick Sloan on our show on Indie Film Cafe Spotlight.
I would love that.
And we would have to ask him some questions, because I'm sure he could tell us.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love to interview him.
Speaking of Kyle, he had probably the most prolonged plot part with the fuzzy puppets and his fantasy.
It got on for too long, honestly, in my opinion, because the thing is that she's on the phone with the sex operator, then the sex operator is like, I'm outside.
At somebody else's house, by the way, using their phone.
Yeah.
Well, they make a comment about the phone charges.
I'm going to charge you for all these things, which they didn't know he was the one doing it.
Yeah.
He's the one saying he's going to talk on the phone all the time. Yeah.
His girlfriend's too shy.
Yeah.
And then Fantasia's like saying weird stuff about meeting a zoo guy and at the baboon pit. I'm like, what?
I need a new house pet to impress my friends. Now hurry before the zookeeper comes. Help me hide this iguana on my body.
Mr. Giraffe, teach me how to swallow.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was a little bit of a weird story.
Although Kyle's a weird guy.
Yes.
That could be his kink.
He is, but you know, he's also the funniest guy there, and he's kind of my favorite character.
He's sort of like, he's kind of grumpy.
He does.
But anyway, so he goes up there and he says, the Fantasia and it wants him to go to, what was the road? It was like
Reputation Road.
Or I guess you gain your reputation.
I guess.
Sleeping with people there at that road. I don't know. But you have to go all the way. There's a sign, literally, that says all the way. Right. But you even mentioned earlier, Jen, that there was this, she said to go to the edge. They didn't even go to the edge.
Well,
no, she said, pull up, go to the edge.
Well, when they first pull up, the car pulls up to the curb. The front of the car is at the curb. And then she says, oh, you have to go further. So the car is in a different location and goes further to the sign that says all the way.
Yes.
And I was like, wait, because I remember when I first saw it, that stood out, and I was like, wait, but they're at the curb. If you go further, you're in the grass.
Right.
And the cliff.
And that's exactly where I was kind of going to go with this as far as Rick Sloan and the way that he was shooting this film. Obviously, this is in that early 80s vein of semi-cartoony kinds of comedies, you know, Police Academy and Airplane and all that kind of stuff where, you know, you're going to get boings and you're going to have signs, you know, all the way. And that was a sign that says all the way. You know what I mean? It's that level of humor, but later.
Here's the problem with that, and I get that, but it's not throughout the whole film like
that. It's not consistent.
No, it's not. So the problem with it is when you have signs like all the way, like if you did it like a Naked Gun, right, to get Naked Gun, if they had a scene like that, it would have been stuff like that throughout the whole movie. From the very beginning, some things would walk on people's heads. Lines would be really weird and funny. But this didn't have that. So it was like halfway like that, halfway not. So when they have the scenes like all the way, you're like a little confused. Like, okay, are they just trying to show us that that's where all the way is?
Well,
or are they making jokes?
Did you miss the sign earlier that said just kissing?
Right.
Yeah, okay. So they have the Reputation Road sign, which looks like a hand-painted sign on a piece of wood. And then while they were in the car, Fantasia goes, no, you have to go closer to go all the way
in
the background. And I know Paul was pointing out all the background fun
stuff. I love the background stuff.
There was the sign that said just kissing, so they had pulled up to just kissing. And then
of course, later on when Amy becomes Slut Amy and is up there dancing around and the club guy is like, so is she a hit or a miss? And then Road Rage just happens to have a sign that says hit.
That would have been funnier if somebody else had a sign that said miss.
Or if it had been upside down or something, it would have been funny.
But so she pulls, they pull up to the thing, and then she's gonna push it off the cliff. And so she's trying her hardest to push, and it's not working.
And here's my question: what the fuck is she at this point? Is she a dream? Is she a puppet? Is she an alien?
She's
what is
Fantasia.
She?
She's Fantasia.
Because she just fades after the puppet gets clobbered.
But everything does. Remember the other
right, 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 right. So then what is she?
She's supposed to be his wildest dreams come true.
But his wildest dream isn't to be murdered by this skank. It's
no, her was to have sex
whatever.
With her, but yes. She never gets that. That was what I was saying earlier. That's the problem. Is because she never fulfilled his fantasy. So it should have been because that other guy got his fantasy, which was to be a rock star on stage. I'm guessing that was his fantasy.
I don't know.
I don't know that even that came true. He didn't really become a rock star. He just kind of posed for a few seconds, and that's about it. I don't think anybody really gets their fantasy. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing.
But
because...
you know what we have missed throughout this discussion so far is the description of Fantasia.
Oh, Lord. Please. Jen, I'm going to let you handle this one.
Yeah,
the gold spandex pants that go all the way up to, I don't know, looked almost mid-chest. No, wasn't that high. But in true 80s high-waisted fashion, and
then the skin-tight
leopard print, the big blonde hair.
Poofy hair.
Oh, yes.
Makeup.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yeah. It's like a watered-down, fourth-rate version of Linnea Quigley on a really, really bad day. It just did not look good. So,
big
Kyle.
Smacking gums.
Kyle, you really need to have a discussion about your choice in females here. Seriously.
I don't know. Kyle, I think Kyle will take anything that'll come to him.
Well, Kyle kept trying. He went on to the next girl at one point.
Oh, yeah. Kyle is your classic horny teenager who, you know, never grows up.
Yeah.
You know. No. So.
So there you go. So to go back to the story and then everything, she tried to push it off and Kevin comes and stops her basically. And then, you know, saves him and then kills the thing.
I just want to point out my favorite part of that whole scene, which might be one of my favorite parts in the film, is she's trying to push him off the cliff. He doesn't understand what's going on, so he leaves the car, goes out, and starts helping her to push the car because he doesn't figure it out. And she's like, what are you doing? Get back in the car, and I'll deal with you later. And he's like, oh, okay. So he just goes in there to be killed because he doesn't understand that he's the one that's supposed to be killed. I just think that's freaking hysterical. That was one of my favorite parts.
It is funny. It was, again, kind of like one of those... Police Academy type scenes, you know, or whatever, which is what you were saying earlier. It's very much in the vein of the 80s, like, okay, this person's so dumb, he doesn't get it that she's trying to murder him, you know. Just funny. So Kevin saves the day and then says the line about, you know, I'm going to charge you for all those phone calls.
We're going to talk about that later.
So you got it. So they get home, they get back, and they find out that Amy's gone. She wanted to go to Club Scum.
Of course, Club Scum. Who doesn't want to go to Club Scum?
So all of them race over to Club Scum and get in there. And who do they meet?
Oh, yeah. First they meet Road Rage.
Road Rash.
Road Rash. Sorry.
And, well, before then they meet, I guess the guy was listed as Lowlife or something.
Right.
Because he was just some guy with...
With the knife. Yeah, and he took all their wallets.
No. So they're standing in front of Club Scum, which is written in lovely bubble letters on the side of the building, if you notice that.
Of course.
And Daphne's telling them how they need to act and act like they belong. And there's this guy on the side of Kyle, yes, who is the lowlife, and he's dressed in black, and he's your 80s gang member guy. I think he had a switchblade. And just kind of, they're on the side again, like Paul was saying, stuff in the background. You kind of know he's there, and Daphne's just telling him how to act and everything, and very loudly proclaims, "Let's all give our wallets to one person. You." And they pass it all to Kyle, who's standing next to the guy with the knife.
The most responsible person in the whole group, too.
Oh, yeah.
Should have been Kevin, you would think.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they all walk off, and poor Kyle's like, guys, Daphne. And then he just hands over his wallets. I thought that was pretty funny. I thought that was pretty well done. It was
subtle.
It was,
It was. Unfortunately, it also has a glaring plot point because now they're into a club with no ID and no money, so no way to buy drinks.
Well, but they didn't know that. Right. I mean, that's not the kind of club that checks IDs.
Well, yeah, we find that out later, and then he just gives them IDs.
Right. So then there's the lovely Road Rash. Talk about Road Rash and Pixie. What? Don't forget those two. They're my two favorites.
Would you call him lovely?
Did you call him lovely?
I did.
You did.
I did. Dwayne Whitaker, you made a lovely Road Rash.
yes, Jed, tell us what you thought of him. Those two fun characters.
Fine. He was your rough guy at the front of the club.
Bouncer type.
Bouncer, thank you. Near that damn tinsel wall that was everywhere.
I know you love that.
Oh my god. And he's not going to let him in until he sees Daphne.
And he's like, oh, you're Daphne. Okay,
yeah.
Yeah. Of course, Daphne has already made her reputation a long time ago.
Yeah. Which they hammer that point home way too much. A couple of comments is all you need.
Well, the funniest thing is when the one sleazy announcer guy is like telling him, oh, well, there's the wet t-shirt contest, and then there's the donkey mud wrestling, and then she comes in and she's like, oh, the donkey mud wrestlers have to use the back, which I thought was funny. Yep.
That's what she's done before or something.
Daphne has quite the reputation.
Oh, well, they did meet
Pixie, yes.
Yeah, because they say first, and I apologize, first they say they're looking for a girl. Kevin's like, I'm looking for a girl here. That's, you know, real specific as you go to a club. And so he calls Pixie out to see if she is working,
quote
wink,
unquote,
wink, tonight with her four-foot bouffant behind.
Right.
5 feet, Marge Simpson-esque, as he pointed out, Jonathan. With her obnoxious accent.
I'm not working tonight.
Yeah. Oh God, the gum chewing drove me nuts.
But she can dance. I give her that.
Well, I mean, compared to the others, which isn't really that high of a bar.
True.
Yeah. So we do get to meet her, and she's the waitress / dancer here.
But I felt terrible for her because Kevin was like, Kevin said this like obnoxious.
Yeah.
Like I would never, you know.
He was kind of a dick.
Yeah, he was being a dick to her. Yeah. She kind of like was like, well, damn it, don't bring me up with this. God, you know, like,
you're not getting 10% of my tips anymore.
Yeah, for that. And
then we have our wonderful oily announcer. Welcome to Club Scum.
Oh, yeah. Low
lives. And then we get treated to this band.
Oh.
And we hear the entire song.
Did you say treated?
Mr. Moody, tell us about the song and the band.
What was the band's name?
Turns out it was the Fontanelles.
Fontanelles. And I think that's what they called them. And the thing. I think they didn't reach an actual name. Because I think they had like on the drum, you know, thing. It said the name of the band and everything. And it was this. And the Fontanelles does not sound like the kind of music that they played. Like that thing just sounds like something out of like the 50s.
Right, right. You know, like 50s kind of like prom music.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's what I would imagine. But no, like stuff you see in Back to the Future.
Right. This is more like, Iran.
Inducing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it
Iran? And Iran, so far.
I would have said Flock of Seagulls.
Flock of Seagulls.
I would not say that. Because I can understand Flock of Seagulls. I can understand a word these guys were saying. And I don't know if that was just because, like, the music was, didn't have it well done or whatever with the
fish picker.
Yeah, so I can understand what they were saying.
Pig liquor.
On MST3K, they call it like fish picker or something.
Pig liquor.
Really what was it?
Kiss Kicker 99. And you found the lyrics to it.
You can get the lyrics
ridiculous.
Online. Yes, they are.
And we are treated to the entire song.
Apparently, anybody like it's not like they're doing stuff in the background, like fun stuff or something. It's like literally just watching the band.
Right.
They're filming their concert from the second table back.
Right. And that's even worse.
Compared to some other movies y'all have treated me to, there were a lot more dancers in this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That scene wasn't the saddest. It was not the saddest. I mean, it wasn't good.
But musically, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it's typical of the 80s kind of stuff, but even so, it's not bad.
Right.
You know.
It's not as horrible. No. Other than me not understanding, and I'm not going to lie, there's a lot of bands I just don't know what they're saying most of the time. Anyway, so, I mean, whatever.
Well, and there's the whole punk ethos where I'm not even sure you're supposed to understand it half the time.
Yeah, I don't think that could not be classified as punk. It was more like, to me, that was more like gothic.
Yeah, new
slash,
age.
Like new age. New slash, wave. Stuff like that. I don't know. I didn't understand what they were doing. Whatever. It was 80s.
But anyway, so we have the band, we have their moment, they get knocked off, and who comes after the band but
Amy.
Yay. No longer frigid Amy.
Strippy thing, but not strippy. So it's sort of like
she takes off like one thing.
She takes off her sheer. Okay, so she has on like a bustier type of a top. Her hair is big and poofy now. Very 80s.
Of course it is.
And she's got tight leggings and heels on. And then she has some sort of sheer overskirt thingy. It's like a piece of netting. And, she's got long gloves on as well. So she takes the gloves off and the sheer netted skirt thing.
She throws all those things.
And that's it.
She throws like something at Road Rash.
Yeah. All of a sudden she's like, she's knocking all over Road Rash.
Yeah, she's all over him. I don't know why.
I guess that's part of her fantasy, is to find a quote-unquote real man, and without Kevin being one, since he failed miserably, Road Rash is the next acceptable. Well, I mean, who else is going to be? She can't do Nick, and it's not going to be Kyle.
She could have tried to go for Nick, and that would have created some tension and drama, and I don't like that, but she went for Road Rash. But all right.
Yeah, and this terrible strip tease thing. I don't know.
Bad.
I mean, honestly, you could show it to a little kid because it
wasn't that bad.
Little stripping and sexual stuff there was. Oh, yeah.
This is pretty tame.
Okay, so, when the movie started off or whatever, when the kids, all the people were friends and talking, they were talking about, oh, I only watch X-rated movies with my boyfriend.
That's Daphne.
And so like that, Daphne says that. Oh, my God. But you know, you only watch PG movies, and then there's a bunch of lines throughout the whole movie about PG/X.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is PG. You know,
very.
This movie is very PG. I mean, if they won't even say like pornography.
There were a couple of words that were blipped out, as a matter of fact, that Road Rage says. You know, when she was, or actually, remember she was talking to Road Rage, she said, "Oh, I like being on a motorcycle. It's like being on a giant blip." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Whoa, I don't remember that." So I don't know if that was just the version or if that was the real thing that happened or what.
Yeah, because then later on they blipped
happens
something
again.
Else out.
They blipped something else out.
I'm really confused. So there's a lot of like,
did you get the little kid version of this?
No. No, the whole movie's a little kid version of something.
Yeah.
No.
But that totally makes sense. This was supposed to be Gremlins.
Yeah.
You know, this was supposed to be PG-13. This was supposed to be for people.
Oh, but you have a bouncing van in the background.
Yeah, but no, kids would laugh at that. Go boing, boing, boing. I think it's funny. You know, the adults will know what that means.
Look, Mommy and Daddy, the shocks are out on that van.
I understand that. But, like, the 80s, there was a lot of, like, there were a lot of movies that did a lot of risque stuff that if you looked back at it, you'd be like, wow, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't even touch that.
I mean, it's at least it's a little more subtle than Virgin High or some of the other things that were out there at the time. So, yeah, I can understand that. But so she has her slutty moment because that's apparently her dream. And I don't know, something he tries to break it up. Kevin starts to break it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into Nick's fantasy, which apparently is all about him blowing shit up.
Yeah.
So he blows shit up.
He just wants to be a, you know, and then I guess that other guy's fantasy, the only thing I can imagine is that other, the it was a sergeant or whatever, he has a fantasy of getting her to go, that Nick's girlfriend Daphne to go be with a bunch of guys in a bus or something.
Well,
that was all about.
I wasn't sure if he was really there or if he was part of Nick's fantasy. I couldn't really
not at tell. First. Yeah, that was a little confusing.
Yeah,
I did think that too.
And then he makes Nick jump on a freaking grenade, and Nick gets blown up. And I'm like, okay, that took a dark turn there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did it?
Well, yeah, that's...
We'll talk about that in a bit.
And if, yeah.
Yeah.
So that happens, but he's blowing shit up, and then they kill off the last two in the group of that, of those, you know, two puppets.
After many explosions inside this club that are supposed to be from grenades and lots of flying people and a chick sitting at the bar who really doesn't care.
And I love how at least on three occasions there were people flying before the flashbang of the grenade went off, which was fun.
Yeah. So we had the MC and Pixie start to get it on. Apparently it was someone's fantasy.
It was the MC's, because if you watch it afterwards, the... Pixie freaks out.
And beats the shit out of him. Which is funny as hell.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't
go, know. Pixie, go.
I was pretty sure that was the MC's, fantasy.
That was funny.
Though, I thought he was gay.
I was about to say, there's just slightly
a little bit of feminine. I think he was just eccentric.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that all happens. We get rid of the goblins, and they decide they're going to go back
to their vault.
To the vault, but they're not doing it to lead the puppets or anything. They're literally just going there, and I have no idea why they decided to do that. But thank God they did, because the puppets were there in the back. They didn't know, and the puppets came and gave them one last little, fantasy.
Because Kevin does have his fantasy with the robber comes back.
Robber comes and he comes back and he's about to get killed, but what's his name? MacReady kills the
shoots the puppet.
Shoots the puppet and the puppet's dead. And I guess it's the last puppet.
Nope. There are a couple more left. Back in the vault. I remember MacReady goes, "Did I tell you what I did in the war? Munitions," and then he blows up the movie theater. He blows up the vault anyway. And first thing that hits me is like, why didn't you do this 30 years ago? When you locked the door 30 years ago?
Well, he wasn't fired 30 years ago.
True.
You know, I think that might have been that. I didn't even think about that, but I'm thinking now that he was fired, he's like, fuck it. I can just blow this thing up. I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was only staying there because he wanted to make sure that those things didn't escape. But, I mean, if he just blew them up and goes, oh my God, I don't know what happens. Somebody must have just blown up your, thing. I mean, whatever. And there's no traces back to him, then he's, whatever.
Ridiculous.
He could have done that 30 years ago, you're right. But he didn't. He did it because then we'd have no movie.
Exactly. So, thank you, Rick Sloan.
I got confused by the explosion because I always thought the vault was in the basement. It always appeared that the vault was down low, but the explosion comes from the top of the building.
It's true.
From two windows. So I don't
know. There was no direction that you got for where everything was. So it could have been up or it could have been down.
There are still bodies in there that are going to require... I mean, there's still police and investigations.
Who knows that they're going to find the bodies, because nobody else found those bodies.
It's a comedy. They scrub around all that stuff.
Kyle tries to get with Daphne, and she's going for it, and she's Phil.
Mr. Nick shows back up.
He's got a couple bandages on and a pair of crutches.
And some red paint on the shoulder.
Because, the grenade just didn't really do that much after all.
And
then they have to celebrate their reunion.
It was all bandages.
Van!
With the squeaky van again.
And people, you can remember that, I don't know if it was that scene or the scene where they were quote unquote driving. You could see people's hands pushing the car.
That was when Kyle and Fantasia were driving, and you can see in the upper left-hand corner the hand pushing the car.
That was awesome. Awesome.
This is the first time I noticed that.
Outstanding. Loved it. So there you go. It's kind of a convoluted story, but it has a beginning, it has a middle, it has an end. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Well, and then the guy asks, he's on the phone with whatever, his boss, telling him that the place blew up or whatever. And of course, because now Kyle doesn't have Daphne anymore, he wants to use the phone again.
Right, right.
Because he didn't learn his lesson the last time talking to Fantasia.
Well, you have Daphne and Nick in the van, and then Amy whispers to Kevin, so they're obviously going to get some tonight.
So,
and poor Kyle, the eternal third wheel.
Exactly. Because while Amy kind of grows and Kevin kind of grows, I don't know about Daphne and Nick, but Kyle, no. He's not changed one tiny bit. Mm-hmm. That's why I love Kyle. Does not grow.
I've known guys like that, and you just sit down, you're like, I can't tell him to go away because he's someone's friend.
You know that projected 25 years into the future, he's still wearing that yellow shirt and pink shorts.
Yeah.
Still.
Yep.
Because it's just him. Mm-hmm. But, there are certain things. Okay, obviously, Rick Sloan goes a little overboard and telegraphs a lot of the humor. Sometimes it works. Most of the time, it does not. But there are certain things, like the background stuff. I love how mm-hmm. he has wacky stuff going on in the background, mm-hmm. you know, because, A, it's fun. And, B, you're right. There are moments where there's, you know, kind of stuff going along that sort of demands that the plot show you that's kind of boring. And I'm not really that interested. People mm-hmm. walking or people talking about stuff. Why not fill that time with something weird going on in the background? Usually involved Kyle, but sometimes Nick and Daphne with the squeaky van or something. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a fun little technique. And I don't think that Rick Sloan gets as much credit for use of that as he should.
I think Rick Sloan doesn't get much credit for anything on this, which is actually, this is actually a decently fun sort of movie. I mean, I don't know how much I'd watch it, you know, over and over again, you know, but I would definitely be interested in seeing the sequel, you know, instead of seeing what happens, you know,
it's fun
later, and like how they can re-bring in the, like, how do new hobgoblins come into this world, and you know, and stuff like that. That's, you know, right, Hobgoblins 3, I mean, why not?
Yes,
right? Make it a trilogy.
Okay.
But you know, as a horror movie, yeah, no, this is a big fat zero.
No, it's not horror.
But as a comedy, you know,
it has its moments.
Half the time it works, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's quite a few like truly funny moments, and or moments that need a little tweaking to be a bit better. But yeah, there are some boring times. There are some weird things, but.
And like you said, it was weird sometimes seeing scenes without any music or stuff filled in. That's a little awkward.
Yeah, there were. Yeah, definitely need some more work. Mm-hmm.
Some of the dialogue I thought was fun. It was interesting. It was very, very 80s. Mm-hmm. I like that. I don't know about there were any necessarily bad performances. I mean, some of the leads were sort of weird and wooden, but it worked for their characters. You know, like Kyle was just a weirdo, but it worked for him. You know, it just totally did. I was so, you know, I really enjoyed his character by the end of the film.
Well, I was going to say the worst were the owner of the studio.
Yeah.
He was just reading Comstock lines. Yes.
Yeah, he was just sort of there.
Yeah, and then the quote unquote robber. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was obviously
David Boreanaz's wannabe.
Yeah, he was sort of fun. I liked him.
He was hired for his nunchuck skills.
Yeah, he did a great job with those nunchucks.
Yeah. I don't know if he could have passed muster with a rake, but he did okay with the nunchucks.
No. I would have loved to see rake versus nunchuck.
So to me, this is one of those instances where Mystery Science Theater took a movie that, okay, it was bad, but it's not horrible. It's not a movie. We've seen much, much worse than this. But they were able to elevate it in their episode because of their writing and their jokes and all that. Mm-hmm. And it just totally made this film into sort of a little mini phenomenon that got all kinds of interest and all kinds of people looking at it that would never have happened otherwise. Mm-hmm. It's not like where they took, you know, something like, you know, there's plenty of really terrible movies that are out there that they've done.
Oh, we talked about this one. Space Mutiny. I like Space Mutiny. This is your favorite.
Man of the Hands of Fate.
Space Mutiny and Puma Manor.
Oh, I love Puma Man.
Puma Man.
Right?
But
those are bad, bad movies that are also bad, just really, really bad. Creeping Terror. Oh, my God.
Ring of Terror was an incredibly boring one, which even using MST3K, it was difficult to watch that because it was so dull as a movie.
So I think when I have shown other friends this film without the Mystery Science Theater stuff, they have the usually the remarks I get is A, it's not as funny as it was, as I was expecting, because it didn't have the Mystery Science Theater stuff. And mm-hmm. on the other hand, B, it's not nearly as bad mm-hmm. as we remembered it. And I think that's kind of the way it kind of is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's how I saw it.
Well, yeah. I thought on this because I hadn't seen the MST3K, and I've only seen this now, and much I'm interested in seeing the MST3K just because I want to see what they particularly say about the scenes or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's funny because, like, looking at this movie, I can see where they could put jokes and but especially, like you said, they're silent, so I'm sure there are jokes when there's silence, you know, and stuff to kind of cover up the boring parts or whatever, which, I mean, when you make a movie like this, there's going to be boring parts because you've got to make a 90-minute movie, and you've got to fill in all this time, and you've got to make it everything as interesting as you can, and sometimes you can't, you know, you're going to get kind of screwed over on that. So I think, honestly, this is a perfect movie for MST3K, mm-hmm. and I'm very happy that, like, I've seen it now, you know.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's right. Thank Jen for this one.
Yes, well, Jen wanted to watch it again.
Yes, she did.
We had discussed, Paul and I had discussed this, and he had mentioned you hadn't seen it, so I thought, well, this is something we need to bring into the mix.
And I was like, because I'd heard that we were going to do it, and I was so tempted to watch the MST3K again.
No.
And I was like, you know what, I should go like completely fresh. Yep. So there I'm the go. Only one here that's, you know, completely fresh and yep. seeing it. And I'm very glad I did. Like, I had no idea what was going to happen, and it was almost like being on a little thrill ride, mm-hmm. you know, in a way, like. It was interesting.
And you laughed. When you saw the puppets first, oh, yeah. you laughed.
I thought there was... Kenneth J. Hall, I will say, we need to get you on Indie Film Cafe Spotlight.
Please.
And we need to talk about your puppets. But your puppets in this was just friggin'... I want one.
So absolutely. Bad. God, who knows if they still exist? That's another Rick Sloan question.
They do yeah. exist, I believe, because I actually saw it when Riff Trax did it. Riff Trax did it live. I don't know how long ago it was.
Like a week or so.
Yeah. Not too long ago, and they got one of the puppets.
Nice.
And it was up on stage.
Nice.
Aww. So they do exist.
Yay.
Yes.
That makes me happy.
They were able to get one? Oh, mm-hmm. man.
Because you remember how I begged and pleaded, there's somebody's got to have that roller gator puppet, and it turned out, no, it's yes. gone.
It's gone. Unfortunately. All that stuff that, you know, Baby Ghost was
that was in there. I think it was part of a mop.
So whatever. But anyway, the point is, I'm glad that this did these success and that was not. Yeah. Riff Trax was, you know, happy to have it there.
And it's smart of them because they know that this was one of the most popular Mystery Science mm-hmm. Theater 3000 episodes, so they know that they could get a lot of people coming in to watch it. So, and then to talk to Rick Sloan, because I think they talked to Rick Sloan, don't they?
Well, they didn't that I saw.
No.
I don't know if it happened afterwards or what, or if it was one of the extras you could get online. I didn't
probably
check that out. Yeah.
But there is extra stuff, and there is extra like interviews and things like that that's on the Hobgoblins 2 disc. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to share that with you guys.
And there is, there is extra at the end of the video you showed us.
That's
waiting
right.
Through all the credits.
That was fun. Fantasia shows up at the end. I'd forgotten all about that.
Expect that.
That was nice.
Not,
it was a nice little, like, end.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's still around. Popcorn exploding.
Fun little movie. So I guess we've finally come to the point where we can talk about rating our film. As you guys know, we use our stinkometer where we rate 1 to 10, where a lower number is less stink and the higher the number, more stink. And if you feel it's in between, you give it a 5, and you can do half steps if you like. So, Mr. Moody, this was your first experience doing Hobgoblins.
Well, you're the
you're our test
here.
Case here. Mm-hmm. So, what would you rate this film?
Okay, well, I'm not sure what everybody else is going to rate, but I'm going to go with a 7. I didn't, this was not like, I don't know, when you hear MST3K, you think, like, you know, it's a stinky movie or something. And this wasn't, you know, like, I could see them making fun of it, like I said, but I don't see it being something that I would, like if I didn't know that there was an MST3K and I watched this on my own, I would think that this was an okay movie. It has good points to it, it has some bad points to it. It seems 80s like, you know, or whatever. But I'm very glad that MST3K found it. They brought it back to life. It exists now. People can rent it, buy it, whatever.
Like a shambling zombie, it is back to life.
Movie. Yeah, it got resurrected. So
we've seen a lot worse than this.
Yeah, we have seen a lot worse. So I'm gonna give it a 7. It's not terrible, but it's not good. I can't recommend it like as far as like if you want to watch a good movie, but I can recommend it if you want to watch kind of a stinky kind of, but sort of fun.
Cheesy 80s movie night.
Like, this would be a blue cheese movie kind of thing.
Oh, there's a Blu-ray. I'm getting it.
No, cheese.
All right, Jen, you're next.
Well, I was close. I was going to give it a 6.
Okay.
And that was a little stinkier.
I thought about 2 a little bit, but then I was like, I decided 7 because it's kind of halfway between 5 and 10. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sort of ish.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, I don't have anything about to say about the story. It's kind of not really new, but
you liked it better than it, I did. But,
yeah. Well, and it the funny part, it has truly funny parts. There is some good humor in it. It is silly, you know, rather than stinky, it's just silly. But there are boring moments and there are bad, I will say, bad scenes, bad, like pushing the car. If you're gonna do that, don't park where there's a street light. We can see the street light is not moving.
Right.
You know, and there were a few things.
All of a sudden, you remember they were pushing the car and they couldn't move it, and then the car moves by itself.
Oh, right. Yeah. Someone's obviously inside driving it. You know, the dialogue was dumb. The people. I hated those people when I first met them. Oh my God, all of them.
They're horrible to each other. They really are.
They're it's just silly.
Yeah, I would have to split the difference and say 6.5 for me. Mm.
Sounds like someone doesn't want to make up his own mind.
I know. 6.5 is about the same. Originally anyway. Yeah, I was about 6.5. Between a 6.5 and a 7.
We'll never know.
But... you know, it's obviously a bad film, but there are a lot of things in this film that I have come to really enjoy. Certain parts of the Rick Sloan vision that I kind of get behind and have liked. And it really is a revelation seeing this by itself without any riff tracks or without any Mystery Science Theater stuff. So if you haven't seen this film sort of originally the way it was meant to be seen, I recommend that you go and see it, and I think you're going to be surprised at how some of the things that really are not that bad are really well done. Some of the acting is really well done. Some of the comedy, when it works, is really well done. It's very inconsistent. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't work. There's a lot of ridiculousness, but it's also fun. It's silly, like you said, and that's what I like. The overall tone of the film is fun. So... to me, I always like a silly, fun, ridiculous film that doesn't take itself too seriously. That's, you know, Rick Sloan knows what he was making, and I think he set out and completed the film he wanted to make, which was a ridiculous, silly Gremlins ripoff. So, there you go.
There you go.
Okay.
We did Hobgoblins.
We did it. So, yeah, at some point we'll have to cover Hobgoblins 2 for a Patreon
movie. Well, I mean, we don't have to.
It would be fun. It would be fun. Oh, come on, Jen. You survived Hobgoblins.
I am intrigued by the fact that you said it's the original actors coming back.
Well, it's not the original actors. They come back for some of the extras.
Gotcha.
But there are new actors, but it's the original characters.
Characters. 20 years later. Okay, so yeah, that intrigues me.
So it's just new people taking over the original characters.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch that.
And that's all I'm going to say. I'm not saying.
You're no fun. I'll have to look that up later.
Fantasia.
Yes. 1-900 skank.
Yeah, the secretary lady.
Skag.
Yep.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, I guess it's about time to wrap this episode up. Thanks, everybody.
Jen, do you still have your Instagram thing, the Jen Cooks That?
I do. It's been a little while since I've updated it. I've been quite busy lately. Yeah, I'd actually baked some stuff.
Summer, so
yeah, it's been a crazy summer.
Yeah. But yeah, but I did fall and are getting into the fall, so
yeah.
I think things are gonna calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
Soon,
but hopefully. I did bake some goodies that I hope to put up soon.
Okay.
Cool. Well, we got some, as much as we can.
Got some new cookbooks. I'm excited to try a 1930s one. That's very interesting.
I'd love to be your cookie guinea pig.
Yes.
Yes.
Always fun.
But yeah, just to let you guys know, in October we will be filming a short film called The Love Spell. That'll be part of a Scream Queen Campfire. We're really super excited about that. And so I guess we'll be talking about it on the next time that Paul is, you know, having his show. Hopefully we might be on set for that one. I don't know.
There you go.
That'll be great.
Do our podcast from the set. How fun would that be?
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so we got so much stuff going on right now that it's awesome. So just check out sickflickproductions.com, indiefilmcafe.reviews, indiefilmcafe.poppy.com. And if you'd like to throw us a buck, we are doing Patreon-only podcast that you guys can check out. And I think later we'll have some really cool like stuff, some giveaway stuff, and things going on over there. So if you want to throw us a buck, you get a free podcast. And if you throw us more, you'll get more stuff going on.
That's right. I just think the more money you pledge, the greater the chances that we can get Just Jen to change her name to Fantasia.
Nope.
But it would go with your leopard skin top and your gold lamé spandex, you know, pants.
You were never supposed to speak of that. Well, Paul probably will not be back for the next podcast, so we apologize.
Oh, no. Save me, monkey. All right, guys. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you on the next episode of Indie Film Cafe. Bye.
Bye.
They're squeakums.
You're not.